Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to this week's Left Ahead podcast. This is Mike Ball, also of Marion, Massachusetts, and Harumph. And today I'm expecting John Connolly. He's a former Boston City Councilor, a West Roxbury resident, a lawyer, a parent of three, two of whom are already in Boston Public Schools. And he's a humanitarian guy. When he was on City Council, he was also in charge of the Education Committee, either first co-chair and then acting chair, and then he ran it for several terms. And I would go to his meetings, and I was always astonished. I say every time I talk about this, is John was the one who would show up and go through all of the details of the budgets and the hours and everything else that people found far too tedious. He loved it. He really got into it. And he would sit there, and it seemed like every school that I went to where John was at a meeting representing the city council, the teachers would always complain, oh, the other school gets all the resources. We don't get anything. Oh, this is terrible. And he would go through and talk about what the reality was. And he had infinite patience, and he was totally devoted to public schools. So he was a good guy for that. So today we're going to be talking about his 1647 initiative. I think John may be joining us right now. Let's see. Hi, John, you on?
Hi, Michael. How are you?
Hi there. Welcome. Glad that you could do it. I was just about to say, his 1647 initiative, 1647 as in the date of the first public school in the country, Boston Latin School, right here in Boston. So you could probably give a quicker rundown of what it is and what you're trying to do. I mean, you were obviously not the originator of the concept, but you have brought it into Massachusetts in a flurry here because after you ran for mayor and did not become mayor, and you were looking around for something to do, and you ended up with this 1647 pilot program, which is really kind of astonishing, and it works out of Chris Gabrielli's National Center for the Time and Learning, his initiative, also centered on education. Let's talk a little bit about what it is that you have done and where you see your pilot going.
I have to make a slight correction, and let me start by just saying thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it. It's good to hear your voice again, and it's been too long, but I've got to make a slight correction. So 1636 is the founding of the Boston Latin School, which is arguably the oldest school in North America, though the Roxbury Latin School would take issue with that. But 1647 is the year the Massachusetts legislature passed an act that said education was a community responsibility. It effectively created the first public school district in what would become the United
Mike.
States.
We're named
for that. It's 1647.
I used to have a Latin school decal on the back of my van. I should have
been. I was going to say.
Okay. I had two kids graduate from Latin, by the way. Anybody else can ridicule me because I had one who went to Latin Academy and two who went to Latin school. And so in my house, we don't say Boston Latin. We're specific. Anyway, right.
we are called 1647, and we are a startup nonprofit. We're incubated at the National Center on Time and Learning, as you mentioned. And our focus is family engagement, which means a lot of different things to people. But for us, it means that what we're trying to do are connect families and schools together with the specific intent that we want to build partnerships between schools and families that support and improve student learning and success in school. And our sort of core offering within that is that we train teachers to conduct home visits with their families. And there's a real method to that. There's no rocket science to it, but there's a method to how you do it. And the notion there is that if you build a real personal relationship with the families of your students that's going to enable you to partner together in better ways, more trusting ways. And then we have a number of other things that we do as well, but we try to build the foundation on those home visits.
Yeah, I got to say, and people should be aware, I'll put a link on it to the there's a Boston Globe article on what you're doing, and then there's the Flamboyant site where you saw them in practice there. Is that foundation worked first in Puerto Rico and then in D.C. On this project, and they did a lot of research. They had and a lot, bunch of documents up on their site that for people who want to know about the background and how it works. And the theory, it's all there. So I'll put those links on the left ahead.
Yep. There's a real body of work, as you mentioned, behind the family engagement field. We actually have probably the foremost national expert on this, lives in Boston, works at Harvard University. Her name is Karen Mapp. She used to be the head of family engagement for the Boston Public Schools. But there's a national body of research out there on sort of what constitutes effective family engagement, what makes good family engagement. My partners in D.C., the Flamboyant Foundation, who have been doing amazing work around this with the D.C. public schools and have helped me launch this initiative in Massachusetts, have also done a tremendous amount of research. And there's another group that I'm part of, the National Parent-Teacher Home Visit Project, and their website is pthvp.org. They're really the founders of the relationship-building home visit model. They're based out of Sacramento and have done a lot of work in Sacramento public schools.
So right away, people, I mentioned this to the various people, and I have a number of relatives who are teachers, and I can hear immediately the teachers and the parents saying, "This is trouble. This is work. I work long hours. I always, and now I'm supposed to go back to the home and do one student at a time. I mean, what am I going to?" And the parents going to feel like overwhelmed, as you noted, some of the parents thinking, what's the trouble here? I mean, the teacher's going to come visit me. Something terrible is happening here. And then when they get there, it's like, they're asked, okay, you need to get involved in this. You need to understand how your son or daughter learns. And this is what you can do after your day of work to help your kids advance. Do you get here from teachers that there's pushback to this is just more work?
Well, I think the fascinating piece here is there, like most things in education, there's a lot of grumbling from one uh-huh. side or another. And I've certainly witnessed firsthand at trainings for home visits, teachers who are not happy to be there. And I can relate to that back as a 23-year-old mm-hmm. in the classroom and being told you've got a mandatory PD, professional development, and you feel like you just don't have any time. That said, the wonderful piece on this is that once the training happens, once the home visits start, the vast, vast majority of teachers are really happy that they're doing it. They want to keep doing it, and they become big supporters of it. And one of the things that we're seeing in soft data down in D.C., and that's just to say in the numbers they've been keeping but that have not been published yet, is that home visits actually improve teacher morale, and I've seen this firsthand. Our pilot work up in Salem, we had 90% of the teachers who were performing the home visits saying they were glad that they were doing it, that it was having a positive impact on their teaching and a positive impact on their student school experience. For the families, there's always a little resistance when you call up and you say, I want to come in your living room. But we get the same result. Once it's happened, it really transforms the relationship. And what you get from a parent is a parent saying, I can't believe this teacher came to my home. I've never felt like a teacher listened to me the way this teacher listened. And I've never felt like they're thinking about my child as an individual. the way this teacher did. So it's transformative once it happens. I think it, you know, it packs a whole bunch of nerves and concern and worry for teachers and parents when the idea is first broached. Once it starts to happen, it's transformational, and the teachers and the families love it.
Because it sounds like once you have the parents and the teacher and the student aligned, that there would be clearer sailing in the classroom, that the students would be more connected, more involved, and more trusting, it seems like. Is that just my sense, or is that what really happens?
No, that's what happens. And the first step here is that you hit the word, it's trust. I mean, before we get to talking to parents about what they can do at home to support learning at home, before we talk to parents about anything they ought to be doing, we try to build a relationship between the teacher and the parent built on trust. And that's really about the teacher listening and making sure that they convey to the parent that they understand the parent's the expert on the child. And that's where it all begins. And then you start to see those other pieces fall into place. But, you know, I'll tell you a quick story, or maybe not, but that really got me in this was I went down to Washington, D.C. to watch the Flamboyant Foundation run a training at a D.C. public school. This is a school with over 30% of the students homeless. You could tell it was a weary faculty, I think, who had just, you know, been pushing up against all the tough parts of being in a high-poverty urban school. They had a new principal who brought Flamboyant in for the home visits. I don't think they were thrilled to be at the training. But the training begins with the parent giving a reflection, and the parent just stood up at the center of the room. And I was struck by the fact I've never seen a parent play a central role in a teacher training before. A parent stood up and said, I used to hate all of you. And everybody kind of popped their head up, including myself. Said, what did she just say? She just said she used to hate all of us. And she said, you know, I have two kids in the D.C. public schools, and I'm a single mom. And, you know, the only time I would ever hear from you is when you were calling to tell me that my kid had done something wrong. And I got a call one summer from a teacher who said she wanted to come visit me at my house. And I said to her, it's, you know, August. What could my child possibly have done wrong? We haven't been at school yet. And she said, nothing, I just want to come introduce myself. And she said, and she basically said she hung up on the teacher. And the teacher called back a second time, and she said, no. And the teacher called back a third time, and she said, listen, if I let you come to my house, will you stop calling me? And the teacher said yes. And the teacher went over to the home and said, you know, listen, you're the expert on your child. I want to just learn about your daughter. I want to hear everything you think about your daughter so that I can do my job the best I can this year and make sure she has a great year. And, you know, tell me about your daughter. Tell me about your hopes and dreams for your daughter. And the mom said this was the first time she'd ever felt that a teacher cared about her child. And that's really what we're trying to do there. We're trying to build a connection that hasn't existed before, and particularly in sort of high poverty schools and with, you know, families of color who feel firsthand the institutional barriers between schools and themselves. We've got to break those barriers down, and this is a great way to do it.
Now, do you know, out from your home and mine, our kids end up there with a bunch of resources. There are books in the house. I don't know. I got several encyclopedias still. I mean, a paper encyclopedia and the Internet. And there's all this stuff is available. And in many homes, there aren't. And I'm hearing from my niece, who is a teacher in Albuquerque. She says, you know, there are a lot of homes where the parents not only don't speak English, but they don't have any resources at all. And is not a single book in the house. Does this make a difference in these home visit things? If the parents are not used to learning themselves, much less teaching?
Well, you know, there's a lot of different types of home visits. And, you know, we focus on a particular kind called relationship-building home visit. You know, there are home visits that you'll see a lot of early educators do, which are focused in particular on raising literacy. and households bringing books into the home, is similar to, you know, you could talk about a doctor or nurse home visit. There are home visits at the high school level that are often focused on recovery of students who have dropped out. Social worker home visits, which are more of an intervention type model. This one is not aimed in the first instance at, you know, raising literacy or getting more books in the home or anything along those lines. But it is set up in the long run to get academic partnerships happening between parent and teacher. And we do that work as well. And yet what you'll see there is that ultimately what we hope will develop out of the trusting relationship is the ability for the parent-teacher to talk and for the teacher to say, you know, I'd really love for you to begin doing sight words with your daughter at home, or begin working on these basic math exercises or whatever it may be. And if you do this 30 minutes a night with your child, you're going to see a real impact in her growth and learning. And there's a method to the way that we do that, but that is what we would call supporting or modeling a learning strategy at home. That can make a huge difference, but that really can't happen if the parent doesn't trust the teacher. So we start with just the focus on trust, nothing else. In fact, when we train that you're going to go in that home, we train very specifically. You're not bringing any school rules. You're not bringing any pieces of paper. You're not bringing any pens or pencils into the home. You're going to look that parent in the eye and have a conversation and listen. You're not going to impart your wisdom and talk down to a parent. And we want to make sure that if nothing else, we're just working on planting the seeds for a trusting relationship. But down the road, yep, we really do hope that teachers can empower parents to help with their child's learning.
So are the teachers finding that they're actually getting an easier time with the students once this is done? Is it are they getting the payback from this thing?
Yep. So you'll see there's a lot of data and a lot of studies out there that will connect effective family engagement practice and home visits in particular with lowering the dropout rate, higher graduation rate, better student achievement, better homework completion, less behavior issues. It really changes the dynamic. And what you'll get from the child right off the bat is, I can't believe that Miss So-and-so came into my living room. This changes everything. You know, I can't believe that she saw, you know, where I hang my artwork at home. In one case, I think very specifically up in Salem where we were working, the teacher went to the child's Pop Warner football game, was greeted by the, you know, extended family who couldn't believe that a teacher was coming out, you know, to watch the child play football, and really, you know, changed the relationship between the teacher and the child, as well as the family, to the point where the teacher was saying that he was seeing, you know, vast improvement across the board. But, yeah, it changes the dynamic. It creates a personal connection. And I think once that connection is there, we really see a two-way street. One, yep, the student is going to make a much better effort. The parent is going to be much more involved in how the student's doing. But the other thing we've seen, really fascinating, teacher will raise expectations for that student, for that child, as he or she really begins to see that student as an individual and not just part of a group or a class.
So are you now, you know, as all these large cities that have strong teachers unions, they tend to be the same like the cops and everybody else is, okay, you want additional stuff from me, then you have to pay me for this and that. Are in cities like Lowell, Lawrence, Boston, are there needs to create some other additional compensation for the teachers to do the home visits?
Yeah, there are, and 1647 is fully supportive of that. As part of the National Parent Teacher Home Visit Project, we hold to some core principles around home visits, and one of those is that teachers should receive an incentive or compensation for conducting home visits. And so, you know, that's something I absolutely believe that we want to value teachers' time. It's the most precious commodity that they have, and recognize they're under a lot of pressure these days, and with limited time and resources, we want to make sure that we show that. So that can come in a few different forms. It may be crediting professional development hours for each home visit. It could be a stipend. It could be, paying something per visit. But, yep, we want to compensate for it. One of the things I love about this work in family engagement and with the home visit specifically is this is an effort that's really supported by both ed reformers and sort of traditional education institutions like teachers unions. It's been embraced by both, by and large, not that everybody supports it, but the national network I'm part of is strongly supported by the AST and the NEA. They helped to found it. Flamboyant, my partner from D.C., has strong roots in the education reform movement in D.C. And this is something that's really, I think, can get both sides in sync and maybe be a way in the longer term to sort of end this toxic debate that really becomes about anything except what's best for children.
So now where are you in your terms of the number of schools that are involved, and where do you see it going to, and what cities do you see it in Massachusetts, that kind of thing?
Yeah, we're in our pilot phase right now. So we are in Salem right now, and it's a two-step approach we take. We're about to begin the second step where we're going to do those academic partnership pieces we've talked about. We're going to continue the home visits. That's an annual part of the strategy, but we're now going to add the piece where we work with parents on helping to support them doing academics at home with their kids. So we're excited about that. We're going to add, we believe, four additional school sites this spring, possibly additional sites in Salem. We believe there's going to be a second gateway city that we will be beginning to work in this spring, although I'm not at the point yet where I can unveil that, but I will just say for right now, we're focused on growing. This second year will be a pilot year as well for us. After that, we would look to grow in on a larger scale. We're going to focus in the gateway cities to begin with. I think those cities face tremendous challenges the same way Boston does, but they have less resources and capacity to deal with it. And so I think we feel we can make a meaningful difference in some of the gateway cities. But ultimately, we'd love to be in Boston, and the vision is that this is a Massachusetts-focused organization.
Okay. All right, people should probably be asking about you. I mean, you've announced that you aren't about to run for mayor again. You're not about to run for city council again. That you are off. You're doing your education thing, and you wanted something that was meaningful in your life, and you see this one as it. I mean, people should be aware that this is not some sort of springboard to get you back into Boston politics. So where do you see yourself with this group? Do you see this as your newest career?
Yeah, no, I absolutely do. I mean, I'm very passionate about this work. I was very passionate about this work when I was on the city council, and that is engaging families and trying to make sure their voice is heard when it comes in particular to urban schools and really making sure urban school systems are working. And this is just really the newest incarnation of that passion. I'm passionate about this. I love this. I want to build this organization, and I want to help empower that family voice, which I believe when it's empowered has a capacity to not just help a student, a child be successful, but also has the capacity to change our schools to reach all children. I really believe that firmly, and that's where my passion and work lies now. I love being an elected official. I love running for mayor. That was my dream job, but it wasn't my only dream job. And maybe someday I'll run for office again. But truthfully, I don't see it. I don't have any plan for it. You know, this is where my heart is.
Yeah, I know how you were about that, and I think I mentioned that you already have two kids in public schools, and you have another one coming up. I take it you haven't been going around visiting Marine Bogey again. So,
okay. I've got two children at the Trotter School. I'm a proud Boston Public School parent. I'll have a third child in BPS in a few years, and you know, that's my favorite part of all that I do, and all the opportunities I'm blessed with to be a dad, and you know, that sinks in with what I do now as well. But yeah, no, I'm a supporter of our schools, whether I'm running for office or not. I guess I'm just less controversial now.
Yeah, why not? No more spoiled food. That's a good story.
Yeah, exactly.
People can look that up if they want to. All right. Yes, I am saying that. My understanding is that I know how hard you work at whatever you do. So, but I understand that your kids actually get to see you more now.
Yeah, I think that's the for me, that was a real blessing in losing the mayor's race. Was just that, you know, at the end of that race, I just felt like I hadn't seen my children, including my newborn, you know, in forever. I mean, for my kids, for my two oldest, that, you know, that was, you know, I got in that race before any other candidate. It was a 9-month campaign, but a little longer actually, but you know, in reality, you know, that work had been going on for the whole 6 years I was on the council. I was, you know, out almost every night. And, you know, as I said before, I mean, I was passionate about that work. I cared about it deeply. I just went at it in a 24/7 manner, but I wouldn't be honest, nor would any elected official, you know, if I didn't say that it didn't take a toll on my family. An incredibly supportive wife, but it's still, you know, the bottom line with kids is that's about time. The great thing now is while I'm working extremely hard, I the schedule's a little bit more mine, and it's not the never-ending schedule of an elected official with upward ambition. So, I can be found at the hockey rink on Saturday and Sunday, and I can be found home for dinner on most weeknights. So this is a welcome change in my life.
Well, congratulations. All right. So now, where do you see, in terms of Boston, do you see it waiting for a new superintendent to settle and everything? And that sounds like it might very well dovetail with your pilot programs to get the gateway cities going and get that all settled down. And at the same time, Boston may have a new superintendent and be ready to go for things and might be up for this kind of stuff. Is that,
We're at least one full school year away from coming to Boston. There are already the Office of Family Engagement in Boston does very good work. They've done some home visit work. And, you know, we would only come in if we were wanted, if there was a place for us, you know, a way for us to partner. And, you know, I do think in a sense, you know, we're going to be very focused on the gateway cities we're in. But if, you know, down the line, the right fit emerges in Boston, we would love to be part of that. And that's to say in particular myself and my partner, Ann Walsh, are both Boston parents. So, you know, we feel a special call to Boston. But we love doing this work no matter.
And this thing is a different model from what most people are used to. When they think about a teacher, they think about 20, 25, 30 students at a time, and you kind of push out the same sort of thing to everybody. But this requires a customization per student for it to work at all. Is that a shock to the system of many teachers and parents?
Yeah, I mean, you've got to, you know, I don't think the parents are the issue here. I mean, I think they can be a little resistant at first, but I think ultimately the parents are really, this is what the parents are looking for in a lot of ways. But yeah, you know, this work really requires that you start with a school leader who's on board and open to it and is willing to prioritize family engagement, you know, as a school strategy and a key to school success. And if you don't have that, like so many other things with schools, if you don't have that principal who's on board, then it's really not worth doing it at all, because it's not going to be done well. But once you've got that principal, you can really do anything. And I think, you know, good teachers like to work for good principals. And if good principals say we're going to prioritize this, then the teachers get behind it. And the other thing with the good principal is the good principal stakes the teachers in on the leadership and the implementation. And you know, when you have that, you can do anything. And, you know, I just think in particular, last night I was in Salem. We were testifying before the school committee there. I had a teacher from the school we piloted up there come and testify. She's an ELL teacher, and she's been in, you know, I believe, actually, I know, she's been in 3 urban districts. And she said, you know, I never know my parents of my students. They're facing tremendous challenges. They've got a language barrier, for starters, but they're living in poverty. And I've never known them. I've never been able to partner with them. They don't know what's going on when their kid gets to school. And this home visit program is really changed the dynamic for me, but also for my family. And when you hear that, you know that you're doing something special, and you know that really this is going to be teachers driving the change, I believe, and getting other teachers on board.
All right. It sounds like a really good thing. My mother was very involved in my education throughout my career, and I think that is, like, you know, so important. And I, you know, it's great that it can be more routinized, more standardized. I think it's a fabulous thing. So I wish you success. And again, you know, I will call you and contact you, so you and I can sit down and talk about things. I'll show you pictures of my grandson.
Michael, I look forward to that. I would love to see that. And you know, I'd love to come on any time for as short or long as you'd love to have me to talk politics. So, you know, if we're going to talk, you know, about the other candidates, things going on out there, other racism, I'm always happy
Great.
To chime in on that if you want. And the other thing is we're long overdue for a bike infrastructure conversation.
Okay. That's something I know a little bit about. All right, we can do that.
You know a lot.
Okay, Mr. Conley, thank you very much. I enjoyed it, as always, and I'm really hoping you have terrific success with this program.
Thanks, Michael. I appreciate it. It's great to talk to you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Good afternoon.
Why not? Do or do not. There is no try.